What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's happy to put absolutely anything on expenses. Coming up, a Football League story, a curse broken, and Osmajic bites back. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Now, what a week it's been in the world of the Football League. Games right across it as the tables start to take shape across the respective divisions. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, and I'm joined by my two friends as ever. Hello, Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matt.
And Adrian Clark's back with us too. You all right, Clarky?
Hello. Yeah, good, good. All the better for your Osmajic bites back line. Predictable, but, yeah. But excellent. Yeah.
Hey, listen, there's nothing wrong with being predictable. I've built a career off that. We will talk about Preston in some depth later. Before we get going, though, let me ask you, implore you to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, helps us grow the show and find new listeners. You can find us on social media at EFL What The on X, at What The EFL elsewhere. And we are also delighted to say that we've partnered up with Quinbet for another season. And to celebrate that, Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. You can't remember that, just look in the description of the pod, it's there for you. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. Okay, we're going to have a look back at some of the stories from midweek first today. So this new Sky Sports Plus deal has been a real boon for Adrian, Sam and I as freelancers, because it means that we're a little bit busier than we were before. We've all been involved in midweek games. We're going to talk about them now. Let's start with you, Clarky. Championship action for you between QPR and Hull. I was slightly surprised by the result, were you?
No, not massively. I think Hull have clicked into gear a little bit. They've got lots of goals in them. That was the promise, wasn't it, when Tim Valter was brought in? They'd rather lose 4-3 than draw 0-0. That was the famous sort of quote from the owner. And yeah, it's carnage watching Hull. Really is. Because you got the centre-half, Sean McLaughlin. He just spends a lot of the game in midfield. And they just leave one centre-back, which is very risky, but it does help them sort of control matches and overload the opposition at times. They rode their luck in this game. QPR didn't play poorly by any stretch. They could have scored four inside the first 10 minutes. Ivor Pandor, the goalkeeper for Hull, had an absolute blinder. Some brilliant saves from him. Excellent handling as well later on in the game. He's keeping Carl Rushworth out of the starting 11, by the way. And Rushworth was one of the best keepers in last season's championship at Swansea. So he's doing fantastically. For QPR, very quickly, some nice football, but inside both boxes, pretty poor. Finishing was off. And at the back, they did make a few mistakes. I'd say Koki Saito, the left winger, the Japanese player, was the best of the bunch. Cutting him from the left, really good sort of mazy dribbles. He was really unlucky not to score two goals from those dribbles and shots. He looked really exciting. So he's maybe one to keep an eye on. For Hull, it was just a very good team performance. Balumi stands out on the right, as does Liam Miller on the left. Two really sort of positive wingers. They just go at their players. You know, every time they get it, they just run at fullbacks. And Miller scored from one of those runs. Just a quick word on Tim Valter, who nailed his assessment of the match. The problem Hull had was that they had Xavier Simons in midfield, flanked by Slater and Casey Palmer, and they were way too far apart. It allowed QPR to sort of slice through them quite easily down the middle. He recognised it, brought on Zambrano and Malum, and it completely changed the game. And from that moment onwards, when Zambrano in particular started dominating midfield, QPR didn't have a sniff, and it was all Hull City. So yeah, it was enjoyable game, and a really promising one, I think, for Hull City, tactically and entertainment-wise, moving forward. They're going to concede loads of goals, but they'll score lots too.
Hull on the up then, QPR, maybe not so much. Sam, it was Carabao Cup duty for you. Your mate Johnny Jackson seeing his game against Newcastle with Wimbledon switch to St James's Park. It looked like a tough assignment for them, but goodness me, they acquitted themselves really well.
Yeah, probably a perfect blueprint for a lower league team going to a Premier League side in terms of how you need to set up or how you should set up defensively. Bit of a masterclass, really. Newcastle had a few chances, but no golden chances, really. And obviously the tie was decided by, well, it is a debatable penalty. It is a foul from Piggott, if you haven't seen it. But he comes together with Fabian Scher initially. Scher dives and play gets waved on, and Piggott subsequently brings down Almiron. So, yeah, it's a foul. But what had gone on previously, Wimbledon felt that the game should be stopped and Fabian Scher should be yellow carded. So if that was the case, obviously, they wouldn't have got the penalty and wouldn't have possibly got through this tie in normal time. So, yeah, tough one for Wimbledon to take. Obviously, Newcastle had all the ball and had all the chances, but defensively, excellent. Three midfield players, really good. Hippolyte and Maycock. Hippolyte's a bit more of an attacking midfielder, so his defensive work was eye-catching. And in particular, Joe Lewis. He was unbelievable, the centre-half. So many blocks, just everything just seemed to be falling to him to clear or to head. The one, I'm not going to criticise him, but maybe the one thing that's kept Jacko awake the last couple of nights, could he have been a little bit bolder, a little quicker? He rolled the dice in the last 5 or 6 minutes, kind of went two up with Matty Stevens joining the fray, and Bugill played slightly deeper. So they had a bit more of an out ball, extra bodies forward, and they had a couple of shots. But in truth, they didn't probably create enough to suggest they warranted it going to penalties. But in terms of defensive showing, a game plan, I think everyone at Wimbledon leaves this defeat with enormous credit.
Yeah, second season in a row, they've gone to a big Premier League team and run them close. So well done, nearly. Hopefully next season they'll get the job done. I was commentating on Harrogate against MK Dons on Tuesday. MK fans were telling me they never win on telly, so the curse is broken at least. But my word, Harrogate really helped them out. They were so, so passive. It was a filthy, filthy night, and there was 1,000 fewer supporters than you normally get for a Harrogate home game. And that really helped MK, I think, because it was just sort of funereal, the atmosphere, for a lot of the time. But Scott Lindsay looks like he's already making his mark. They passed Harrogate to death. Joe White, Newcastle alone, he stood out, scored on his birthday. Big for Tommy Lee to get off the mark. First away win for them since they were last at Harrogate in April. Made me think, Clarkie, that actually, particularly given that their next two league games are at home to Tranmere and Port Vale, you'd expect MK to start shooting up the table sooner rather than later.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, I rate Scott Lindsay. I think we all do on this pod. He did a great job at Crawley. The football will suit the players that he's got. It's as simple as that. Maybe they just needed a new voice in the dressing room after the crushing disappointment that they had under Williamson at the end of last season. I think Tranmere and Port Vale at home, I think they'll be disappointed if they don't win both those games.
Elsewhere, goodness me, this one stood out. All season, Sam, we've been saying, well, Portsmouth have had tough fixtures. Something's going to break for them soon. 6-1 hammering at Stoke on Wednesday night to give Narcis Pelac his first win. We said last week, you know, John Massinio, Rich Hughes, both been back, both been given new contracts. They need to pick up a result pretty soon, don't they? Still waiting for their first win, but this is the first time they've been completely dismantled.
Yeah, I think that the pressure starts to grow now on these more winnable fixtures. I think you can always point towards the fixture list and the decimated squad, the problem areas at centre forward and centre half in the early weeks of the season, which I think are all real valid excuses and ingredients to why Portsmouth are struggling. But yeah, absolutely, with Oxford on the horizon, it's now that they need to start picking up points. This is an alarming defeat because of the scoreline, but I think you have to focus on the centre forward, Tom Cannon. You have to say that this has maybe been not coming in this to this extent, but I think the Stoke manager has already shown that they're going to play with real intensity, real aggression, and they've got good players, Stoke. So they've probably missed having real clinical element to their side. So having Gallagher and Cannon up there, I mean, that's physically incredibly strong. And Cannon, think back to him at Preston, when he had an opportunity at Leicester, he is a brilliant finisher. I love seeing a centre forward score two with either foot, two dead balls with his right and two in open play with his left. Incredible finishes. So I think you focus in on that. You kind of just write it off, be balanced as a Portsmouth fan and someone involved in the club, but knowingly that there probably has to be changes ahead of that next game. The goalkeeper, Norris, for maybe three, maybe four, you could question his involvement. And yeah, some of the senior players actually just not at it completely as well. Likes of Pack, Ogilvy, that have been so consistent. So considering it was pretty similar lineup the last couple of games, might want to make a few changes ahead of, what now is the start of the season, I would suggest, what I've been saying for Pompey.
Yeah, Oxford at home, then they go to QPR and Cardiff, as it stands, are the two teams in the bottom three with them. Clarkie, you rightly said that we ought to be tipping our hat to Middlesbrough elsewhere in the Championship for a fine win for them at West Brom.
Yeah, well, they cruised past Stoke, didn't they? 2-0 in the game before. 26 shots to 7. You know, really comprehensive win for them there. And then they go to the Hawthorns, which is one of the toughest fixtures of the entire season. And they grind out a 1-0er. So good week for them. They're up to 7th. I think at the heart of it is maybe a really blossoming central midfield partnership between Hayden Hackney and Aidan Morris, who's a full USA international. I think he came from Columbus Crew. And he settled in well, disrupts the game, but also passes it really nicely. I noticed 75 of his 78 passes in that game found a teammate, which is impressive, I think, in the hurly-burly of the Championship. At the back, Ralph Vandenberg has come in with Edmondson. It's a new partnership. Well, they played the other day and did ever so well. And in general, you look at their defensive record, Borough, it's solid. 4 clean sheets already. Only Leeds and Sheffield United have got a lower expected goals against. So if they can get their forwards going, and they haven't got going yet. Latte Lath has been quiet by his standards. And you don't forget, you got people like Finn Azaz. You've got Ben Doak, who started to click, the teenager on loan from Liverpool on the right. Once that starts to really fire, they're going to be a team, I think, Middlesbrough, that you're going to have to keep your eye on. So, yeah, I think now that they're up into the sort of playoff contention, I don't expect them to slip away. I think, if anything, they'll just head further upwards.
You mentioned Columbus Crew there. It reminded me that when I was doing my prep on Harrogate, I noted that Toby Sims was signed from Pittsburgh Riverhounds. So if that's not a wonderful name for a football club, and I don't know what.
What is a Riverhound? I mean,
I don't know. I was wondering that. I mean, a seafaring dog.
Not many of those, though, are there?
Very few, no. Let us know if you know at EFL what the on X. League One, Mansfield, crikey, 2-0 winners at Crawley. They've won 4 on the spin. We often talk, Sam, about there's not much difference between National League and League Two these days. Is it the same between League Two and League One? And just looking at Wrexham, Mansfield and Stockport occupying, what, the top 4 positions behind Birmingham?
No, I don't think there is a big difference. And I think you're talking about 3 incredibly strong sides, obviously with big backing in terms of, 3, but probably more so Stockport and Wrexham in recent times. But, you know, Mansfield have certainly had a big budget in their attempts to get out of that division. And Nigel Clough has put together a really good squad. I like the look of the front players. Obviously, Lee Gregory is in really good form. We tipped him up to have a good season. But when you think that they've got Tom Nichols as well, they've got Evans from Newport, who had that amazing season last year, and Ben Wayne, young player that was at Argyle, who never really got a run of game. But I think at that level, could be a decent deputy maybe to Lee Gregory. I had a little look this morning because he was going with the old trusty diamond, Nigel Clough, early part of the season. And they obviously had a few indifferent results, lost 4-1 at
Biffed it off, hasn't he? Biffed off Lincoln. The diamond.
Yeah, it does like kind of ring a bell that he has played the 3-5-2 as well. So that's where the way they're going at the moment, some configuration of that. And they've not looked back. Conceded 9 in the first 4, conceded 2 in the subsequent 4. So absolutely on the up. And we probably anticipated them consolidating. Who knows? Could be better.
Could be. Right, in League Two, Clarkie, we're going to talk about Walsall later ahead of their game at the weekend. So, Saddlers fans, you can rest easy for a sec, maybe. We'll just give the credit to Fleetwood, going to the Poundland Bescot and scoring 6 times. My goodness me. That is very impressive and continues. What's been a decent start for Charlie Adam, which is a weird thing to say about a manager who got relegated, but that wasn't really on him, was it? And we saw signs of life for them end of last season, and it looks like they're going to carry that on this time round.
Yeah, definitely. I like what I'm seeing from them. I mean, it's probably the most most ridiculous result of the season so far, because Walsall were the Mr. Solid. You know, they weren't giving up very much at all. And they only had 12 shots in the game, actually, Fleetwood, and smashed six in. So well played. The front two look good. Irish guys, actually. Ronan Coughlin's got four goals and an assist in four starts. He came in from Waterford, so I didn't know much about him before, but the finishes were very tidy in the game just gone. He looks like a real poacher. And then alongside him, he's got a guy called Ryan Graydon, who's more of a creator, a little bit lively, got a bit of pace about him as well. So together at the top end of the pitch, they seem to be looking pretty good, pretty sharp, those two. So we'll see how they get on. I mean, Fleetwood have scored 16 goals, and I noticed they've hit the woodwork five times as well. So very confident on the ball. And the thing that stands out when I've seen their highlights and seen them play is that they're not afraid to pass it forward quickly. It's not just about sideways. It's like, can I put a ball forward behind someone, or can I give it to my centre forward? They're very confident on the ball. And I noticed on the stats, after I sort of made that observation, I looked it up, and they've made the second highest number of through balls this season. So that's a trait of Charlie Adams' team. You've got Matty Virtue, who sort of crashes the box and scores goals as well. So great week for them. 1-2 at Cheltenham, and then smash Walsall 6-2. So up to sixth, Fleetwood. And they look like a team that are fully on board with the manager.
You only lost the one game, 1-0 at Wimbledon. It was a really good strike, which saw them defeated that day. But I noticed they've given up two goal leads on a couple of occasions, at Notts County and at home to Morecambe. So this start to the season could arguably be significantly better. They'd be, with those 4 points, obviously joint top of the table. So I think it's been a tremendous start for Charlie Adam, and looked like good fun that game at the the Bescot, the Banks. What's it called these days?
Poundland.
There was some. I used to play there. Blimey, there was some calamitous goals. Shall we say there was a scramble to match some of the ones we've seen already this season. That one at Hillsborough. There was one of similar ilk in this game as well. So a bit scrappy, some of them, but a resounding win, as Clarkie says, against the team that have not been given up chances, let alone goals.
If Fleetwood could take a penalty, they might still be in the League Cup too. Right, next today, we're going to speak to a man who's spending the season living out every football fan's dream. Daniel's story comes next. Well, you'll have seen this, listener. Daniel Story, chief football writer for the Eye and All-Round Good Egg, is doing the 92, but in a season. Struth! Delighted to say that Daniel's with us to tell us the whys and the how on earths. First of all, Daniel, tell us the inspiration for this idea. And did you ever believe that your boss would actually sign it off?
You have unearthed my secret. Yeah, I didn't think I'd ever get it signed off. I first pitched it in stupidly, although with some insight, pitched it in 2022-23, which you will remember had a massive World Cup in the middle of the season. So the sports editor, Ali Mackay, who has been like so good about this, said, you're mad anyway, but you're certainly mad to try and do it this season, so no. And then I kind of let it fester for a couple of years and pitched it for this year. And yeah, they went with it. So look, they've been so kind to get it off the ground and give me like so much support around it. It wouldn't have happened without that. But yeah, I am the one doing the... we ticked over 4,000 miles last night as we record. So it is... yeah, it's kicking on.
I was going to ask if there's any kind of order to it, but given that you're at Bournemouth on Monday and Burnley on Tuesday, I'm thinking probably not.
Yeah, that's a bonus on contention. I'm trying not to do that very often. I've got a week's holiday starting next week, which means I've had to... We didn't want the kind of routine of five pieces every 2 weeks to get impacted. So I've had to scurry up and down the country over the last week or so. There is no order to it. I've got this kind of massive spreadsheet of games scheduled up until January. The Sky's new EFL deal, although not popular with everyone, is been a godsend for me because it means I could kind of plan everything meticulously until mid-Jan and then hopefully come end of November for the rest of the season.
Yeah, is it dependent on how a team might be doing, I wonder? Just because you're looking to get good access, you're looking to get a nice friendly welcome. And following on from that, my question would be, what's the sort of good vibe club that you've been to so far in terms of the connection between the fans and the team? Because it's such an important factor. Where have you felt the most good vibe so far? And if you dare say, where has it maybe been the opposite?
So the worst choice I've made so far, and it's no slight on the club or the manager because Tom Cleverley was really kind with his time, but I picked an early EFL Cup tie against Plymouth where there was like something like 7,500 in the ground, which isn't the authentic experience you want. And as such, I scratched off a couple of EFL trophy games that I had slated because I just don't think you get the best experience of a club at that time. In terms of good vibes, I mean, I was at Bromley's first home game, which was a joy. They obviously won. They beat AFC Wimbledon 2-0 in a sort of semi-local derby. That was very much kind of good vibes only. But everybody's been really good, I have to say. Like, I've sort of emotionally blackmailed by sending emails to clubs and saying, look, everyone's been really friendly, so hopefully you'll be the same. But the access has been like I wouldn't believe. As part of this, I'm obviously doing the 20 Premier League clubs, which presents a challenge in terms of access, but I can kind of have those on Sundays to pick them when I want. So pick an opportune time. So I did the North London Derby at Spurs. I did Villa against Bayern Munich last night in the Champions League. So I'm able to kind of pick out clever moments there. But in terms of the EFL, it's just to an extent, yes, putting in games where I hope the club's doing well, but I don't want this to ever be, I don't want the pieces I ever write to be dependent on how the club's necessarily doing in the league. I want to be able to kind of offer a sort of bigger picture because like, you're only going to visit a club once, right? So you want to be able to do it properly.
In terms of the place or the game you were most looking forward to before it all started, has that happened yet or is it still to come?
If I managed to beat, in terms of my own kind of physical excitement, if I managed to beat what happened at Harrogate Town, I'll be impressed, which is Simon Weaver agreed to be shadowed for the day on match day. And I went round to his house at lunchtime and kind of spent the afternoon. And we did the meal, pre-match meal and match meetings with the players. And I went into the dressing room beforehand. And I kind of assumed I'd wander off to the press box and meet him after the game. But he had a kind of quiet word in his ear and gave me a long club coat and said, if you keep quiet and be well behaved, you can sit on the bench next to me.
Initials on it?
There were initials on it, but not my initials. I kind of nicked someone else's coat. So
yeah someone that was sat just in the like, stand freezing yeah, cold.
Freezing, exactly right. Rightly so, Adrian. So yeah, that kind of acts, those sort of pieces, like, you know, I know we all kind of dreamed when we started writing about and talking about football that we'd have this sort of access, but it very rarely comes, particularly when you cover the Premier League most seasons. So to get that level, it just means the pieces are so much better and the insights so much greater. So I'm kind of laying them down as a gauntlet to every other club to like beat Harrogate, please.
You must be enjoying, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I assume that you're enjoying dipping your toe back into the Football League, right? Because the Premier League is obviously very managed from a media perspective. You know, you're not going to be in the dugout at Old Trafford anytime soon. And I guess you're ticking off grounds that you haven't been to before.
Absolutely, yes, to both of those things. I mean, we do try at the eye to, I do get a remit that although chief football writer means you have to cover the biggest stuff, they are really good at letting me do other ideas. You know, I've done African Cup of Nations in Cameroon and Ivory Coast. I've been to the Faroes to tell a story about Klaksvik in Europe. And so they let me do those pieces, which is brilliant. And EFL, thankfully, returns pretty good numbers in terms of subscribers. That I think the point to make is that there are a lot of fans of a lot of clubs who feel their clubs basically get ignored by written media, certainly written national media. So if I can kind of squeeze out a little pocket of that to take them with me, then all the better. And I hope and I firmly believe, I don't think I'm talking out of turn here, where I say that when I go back to, in inverted commas, the normal job next season, what I've done this season will have created some belief that we can carry that on, because the Premier League can sometimes feel one of two things, either that you're having to be a big opinion haver every week, or that it's a fairly homogenous experience if you're not careful, certainly covering it from a media point of view. And that's the opposite of the EFL. Like, there are so many good stories. Like, I've got a big spreadsheet that's got ideas, multiple ideas for every club, and I can only do one of them. So that means that there are two or three ideas that in any other season, let's go to Bradford City and talk about that player. Let's go to Cheltenham and talk about the role that their supporters trust will have in a potential takeover. These are all things that deserve to be covered, and people aren't really covering it because they see Manchester United or Big Six clicks and numbers, and that's the be-all end-all. I'm really lucky that the Eye has an app which requires a subscription, and they want to get people on there and selling long-form detailed content about football clubs that people don't write about enough is a really good way of doing that, I think.
I think it's brilliant, mate. I think it's superb. And you're right. There's so much interest going on across the EFL. I've got two very important questions, massive questions. Obviously, you're covering all this mileage at the minute. Yeah, best service station and what's your meal deal of choice? Because you must have got through a heck of a lot of meal deals by now.
Yeah, I mean, the vague concern of this project is I end up in May at kind of triple my fighting weight, which is, yeah, when you include kind of press box pies, etc., it's a going concern.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to look beyond T-Bone in Gloucester. I know it's a kind of wokarati middle-class service station. I'm very much in that bubble. But yeah, they've got the reputation for a reason, right? And they're also far enough away from home where I need a stop. Like, this would not be possible if I didn't live in the Midlands, I don't think. But living in the Midlands means there's only Plymouth that's more than 4-hour drive or 4-hour journey for me to get to. So yeah, T-Bay and Gloucester are the winners. Everyone else needs to up the game.
Dan, can I just suggest you go to Teal, which is on the 303, just near Yeovil. So if you're going to Plymouth or Exeter, have to do it. Incredible.
Yeah.
Why is it incredible?
Losing a few listeners here, aren't we? It's not really a service station. It's a farm shop just off the A303, which my sister's got me onto. It's sensational. It's about a perfect halfway stop between here and Home Park, I would suggest.
I will do it. I've done Exeter, but I haven't done Plymouth. So
you have to come via London, though, for that one. Sorry, I didn't realise you were in the Midlands, but it's worth it.
Well, look, if you can expense a trip to T-Bay, then it's definitely worth it. We really appreciate your time, Daniel. Give us some plugs, please. How do people sign up for the eye to read your excellent work?
All the pieces are on inews.co.uk. I am relentlessly plugging things on every social media platform you can think of. I mean, look, if you enjoy it, tell me you enjoy it. But more importantly than that, please tell someone else that you've enjoyed it, particularly if it's a fellow fan of your club on a forum or on a podcast or whatever, because word of mouth is more powerful, I think, than anything else with a project like this. Like, I am going to come to your club. I'm going to do a deep dive on them. I'm going to spend time with you around the piece I write. And like, the only way that this works as well as it can is if I get the story right. And the only way I can get the story right is by speaking to fans. So get in touch.
Yeah, and do sign up. It's excellent value and well worth it as well. Daniel's a brilliant writer, and yeah, you can get it for £1 for the first month. You can cancel whenever you like. So please do that and support this fantastic project. Daniel, we'll let you get to Walsall. Many thanks for your time today.
Yeah, let me get to Walsall is probably the tagline of the project. So thanks for bringing it to me.
Many thanks to Daniel. As we say, do sign up for the Iron Reader's excellent work. Next today, we're going to switch our attention to the weekend's action. Let's start with a proper heavyweight championship matchup at the Stadium of Light, where Sunderland and Leeds United will go at it. Sunderland leading the way in the league after dispatching Derby in midweek. Sam, they've won all four home games to nil. If you are a Regis Le Bris doubter, that's probably not how you pronounce his name, you will not be anymore, I would suspect. This has been a fabulous start for him in English football.
Yeah, it's been an incredible start. Maybe one bad half of football at Argyle, where they obviously collapsed to a degree. But I think we've seen that Plymouth Argyle are very much to be taken seriously. I think this season, they're not going to be cannon fodder. They're backed up, obviously, with that fine win over Luton at Home Park. So, yeah, Sunderland have been incredibly consistent to this point. They've responded to the couple of defeats that they've had by winning the subsequent games. And as you said, at the Stadium of Light, they are incredibly strong. And this is with a consistent lineup. He didn't make changes the other day after the most recent defeat at Watford. Pretty similar team that took to the field against Derby, and they respond in a difficult game against a Derby side who really sit in. This is going to be a completely different game, a complete contrast. Sunderland 20th for average possession at the moment. They are happy to break and break fast, and Leeds invariably will have more control of the ball. So that's the style of game, the pattern of the game that I'm anticipating. I think it will be low scoring, despite some brilliant attacking players on both sides. And I probably wanted to flag the centre forward who's come in the absence of Mayenda, who had that great start to the season. Isidore comes in, scores two goals from kind of cutbacks, from crosses, getting into the area, the danger area, and scoring maybe goals that I wouldn't associate with Sunderland necessarily. So maybe that is another really important piece in the jigsaw. Andy brings them pace and mobility, a really encouraging start from him, and Leeds with a couple of injury issues. Yeah, maybe not the worst weekend to be taking on, you know, arguably one of the two best teams in the division.
Clarkie, I'm going to put to one side my disappointment that I didn't preface our Stoke versus Pompey chat with cannon fodder, because that was the time to do it. Are Leeds going to be able to put behind them the disappointment of losing Ethan Ampadu for the rest of the year? Think about all the players that have left permanently. Now that captain's out with injury, that feels a pretty significant blow to me.
Seismic blow, I think, for Leeds United and their prospects of getting promoted. I think it's massive. I really do. And what and that misery could be compounded by the time people listen to this podcast, because Gruev, his midfield partner, limped off at Norwich and is having a scan, and they're worried about him and his availability moving forwards, which would leave the new player, Tanaka, who came on and did all right, actually, at Norwich. Looked good, alongside maybe Joe Rothwell, dropping into a slightly more orthodox central midfield position. So, you know, Tanaka and Rothwell, I don't think is as strong at the outset as Ampadu and Gruev, who are sort of tried and trusted in the Championship. So, yeah, big. Ampadu in particular, a huge influence with the ball, with his range of passing, but also without the ball. He's got that defensive nous, great reading of the game. So, yeah, that is a problem for Leeds, who have been really solid. Teams have had 67 touches inside the Leeds box this season. So what, you think? Well, the next closest is Middlesbrough, 96. So, you know, 67 to 96. And Sunderland, I think, is 116, you know, and they're one of the best teams at protecting their box. So Leeds are keeping teams at arm's length very, very well. But without two solid midfield players, that might change moving forward. On the other end of the pitch, pretty good. Largi, it's a great name, isn't it? Largi Ramazani. He looks good in the absence of Solomon. He scored.
So you're having it, Largi, then?
He's having it, Largi, at the minute. He is. And it was a top draw finish from him. A really crisp finish at Norwich. You got Willie Nonto, who's started the season on fire. Joseph up front is a great platform for them, but not scoring that many, but he's a good player. I think I agree with Sam. Low scoring game, maybe the cards have sort of fallen quite kindly for Sunderland. Wouldn't surprise me if they nick this, the home team.
Dusts off many scripts from previous shows. There's a Lancashire hot pot at Turf Moor this weekend as Burnley and Preston renew hostilities. This one's got Paul Heckingbottom sending off for snagging Scott Parker's expensive cardigan written all over it for me. Burnley edged out Plymouth in midweek, Clark. They've only lost once in the league so far, but a lot of victories by a single goal. Yeah. Solid, if unspectacular, progress.
Definitely, yeah. They've scored five goals in their last six games. And you look at their forward line, you think, what's going wrong? Because, you know, they've got a settled forward line, for starters. You've got Foster up front, Colioscio on the right, and then it's either one of Sarmiento or Jaden Anthony on the left. I mean, that's the envy of a lot of teams in the Championship. Obviously, Josh Brownhill pushing on from midfield. So yeah, look, and Hannibal as well. But yeah, it's not really gelled for them, but maybe we shouldn't be surprised, because it's a new team, isn't it? It's a team that Parker hasn't really got to grips with yet. I think he'll be delighted with the results, considering they're so new, considering the forwards haven't really got going. They've shown a little bit of fight, they've a bit of togetherness as well, and they've sort of got some ugly wins. You know, the one at Leeds was an ugly win, the one at weekend as well, midweek rather, against Plymouth, sort of ground it out second half. Pretty well organised. Settled back four, you've got to say. Estev and Egan Riley at centre half. Perez at left back. Humphreys right back. So, yeah, they're building. It's too early to judge Burnley. But, yeah, I don't see them smashing Preston at all. I think this will be a keenly contested derby where maybe Burnley's quality individuals might win it for them. But I don't think there'll be much in it. This will be a scrap. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to swashbuckle much in this game, Burnley, because they're just not in that place yet.
A little news line coming out of Burnley today as we record. Jack Cork has got the loveliest of jobs. He's gone back there to do the academy coach player role for the dev squad. I'm amazed neither of you two went in for that. Sounds like a treat for me. So then, Sam, a Hannibal on the Burnley team, a Cannibal in the Preston team. As we record, Osmaic is going to be able to play. He scored twice against Watford in midweek. That was the very definition of a much-needed win for Paul Heckingbottom, wasn't it? Only one victory since he'd arrived before that. That'll restore a bit of faith that his way is the right way amongst supporters and hierarchy alike.
Yeah, absolutely. I think going forward, absolutely. I think they're giving up quite a number of chances. They needed Freddie Woodman to probably have the big moment of the game, the one-on-one stop from Barr very early on, and Watford did pass up quite a few presentable opportunities. So that will be a bit of a concern ahead of a game against a team, as Clarkey rightly says, are incredibly creative. But yeah, I think going forward, the supporters are enjoying what they're seeing. Kessler, Hayden and Brady, I think, in the wide positions, impressive. Probably Brady better going towards the opposition's goal rather than defensively. And Kessler Hayden, incredibly impressive, making one of those goals for Osmaic, who, clearly run into a little bit of form now. And if they're going to miss him for a period, that's going to be a concern for Heckingbottom, because Emil Reese has not looked anywhere near the player that he has looked previously for North End. But for this game, I would anticipate, Paul Heckingbottom coming up with something, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is something akin to what we saw against Blackburn recently. Scrappy, you know, make it really hard for Burnley. And again, I anticipate this being probably low scoring. It was a little bit of an outlier considering I think they had the lowest XG going into this game in midweek against Watford. To blow them away in the fashion that they did was surprising in the second half. Don't envisage them continuing in that vein. But yeah, I think in time, Paul Heckingbottom, when he can really mould that squad with a window in January, I'd expect them to be a little bit more easier on the eye. But getting them going forward, I think, has certainly struck the right chord with the North End supporters.
All right, two big games to look forward to there. Give us just under 5 seconds and we'll be back to talk about League One. Honestly, we don't just pick games to preview so we can ask whether or not they're derbies, but Huddersfield against Barnsley, anyone? The Darren Moore derby, a Yorkshire derby, the dog derby, a tyke is a mongrel.
The flat cap derby.
Oh, well, you get some angry tweets for that one, I think, Clarkey. Huddersfield, please explain to me, Adrian, what has happened here? They have plunged down the table. They've lost their last four after that 4-0 win at Bolton. We had that Aggie tweet, didn't we, from the owner the other week, and that was after a defeat in the EFL Trophy. Yeah. The last thing Michael Duff needs here is a game against an old club still stinging from him leaving them.
This is true. This is true. And the owner or the chairman, is it Kevin Nagel? He's been alarmingly quiet, hasn't he? He'll have something to say probably if they lose this one. Injuries, I think, can take a proportion of the blame for this. You know, they lost their goalie, Lee Nichols. That's big. And Hillick, Michael Hillick, a bit of a giant, really, in both boxes, isn't he? He scores goals. He stops goals because, you know, he's such a strong aerial presence, and they're both out for quite a while, I'm led to believe. They've been making some errors. Poor performances at losing at home to Northampton and Blackpool. Bit better the last couple. Weren't embarrassed by Birmingham at all. Only a 1-0 loss. But yeah, they need a bit more from their forwards, clearly. It hasn't happened for Ladapo yet, or Radulovic, but Karoma's the guy with four goals, isn't he? And if Karoma's not doing it for them, you're wondering who's going to come up and score the goal. So I also noticed that Duff has used 26 players already this season, 29 games in. A lot of managers wouldn't use 26 over the course of an entire campaign. That tells me, obviously, injuries are an issue, but also he's very much trying to learn what his best team is at the moment, Duff. So yeah, he'd love to fall on it in this one, wouldn't he, against Barnsley, who won't make it easy for Huddersfield, because Barnsley on the road, they're tidy.
Kevin Nagel update. He switched his attention to his other concern, Sacramento Republic FC, last seen tweeting, "Congrats to the entire SRFC team of a dominating performance against the top table club in USL 4-0. Way to get back on the winning track and stay focused. Not well composed, that, but he's got bigger issues on his mind at the moment. Sam, Barnsley have done all right, haven't they, since that Old Trafford horror show? Last minute equaliser against Wickham, unbeaten in three. And this, of course, is the warm-up fixture for the big EFL trophy match that yours truly will be commentating on between these sides next week.
Yeah, I'd noted that. It'd been a decent response after that humiliation, really. And Darrell Clark came out swinging a little bit after that defeat at Old Trafford. So, yeah, decent response, albeit, as Clarkey just alluded to, that home form just continues to, struggle. They'd struggle at home. It's ridiculous. Last season as well, I think they took 8 more points on the road last season, and they've won 3 out of 4 away already this, and just won the once at Oakwell. So they'll be pleased to a degree to be away from home. Probably have the same sentiment about Barnsley as Clarke just did about Huddersfield. I don't think Darrell Clark necessarily knows exactly how to get the best out of some of his forward players, how to line them up right now. I think there's been quite a few different systems. It's probably getting the best out of Adam Phillips and Keeler Dunn, who want to operate in a similar type position, similar type role. And Humphreys has been coming on and affecting things off the bench, but from the start, maybe not as much. So I think just going forward, there's a few conundrums there that will probably iron themselves out as the season progresses. But right now, they're a little bit of a mixed bag. Yeah, only 5 teams conceded more than their 13, so they're shipping goals as well. But this will be competitive. This will be 2 combative teams, I think, going at it. 2 managers who are very good at this level. And 2 teams I would expect to probably be, top 7, top 8 come the end of the season. So I would put it down to early season teething problems and both to probably get stronger as the season goes on.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens in that one. Another League One game that we're going to have a chat about sees Birmingham, who continue to set the pace in the division, go to South London to take on a Charlton side whose early season form has well and truly deserted them. What's gone on with the Addicts, Sam? 3 defeats on the spin all of a sudden.
Took me a little by surprise, actually. 3 points from 12 since me and Clarkey were there, and arguably should have won that game against Rotherham if memory serves me right. And embarrassingly beat them, really, at Bristol Rovers in the week. 3-2, I think it was in the end, but Rovers raced into a 3-0 lead, giving away a lot of goals from distance. We saw one whistling on that day that we were there at the Valley. And again, Bristol Rovers taking advantage of an alarming amount of space, really, just outside the Charlton 18-yard box. So I don't think it's a fluke, is it, when you keep conceding goals of that ilk? So that's something they have to look at. But it's going the other way, I think, for Charlton. And it's something that we notice really early part of the season. They're just not creating enough in this system. There is personnel options for Nathan Jones to change things. You got Leeburn and Godden off the bench the other day. He's been going with Ahadmi, who's not had a brilliantly fruitful start to the season, and Campbell alongside him, who's not really a centre forward. So there's options for him to change it up. Some other squad players, Teo Eden and Terry Taylor, getting sparse minutes at the moment. So there are options to change things. And I think there's really a necessity after this recent run of games ahead of a big game against Birmingham. But the 2 wing-backs as well, that me and Adrian spoke of a few weeks ago, Small on one side and Ramsey on the other, not starters at the moment. And not at it during the week. So I would expect changes for what is a massive game against Birmingham. It feels like Nathan Jones has still got the majority of the support, but another couple of poor results and a change and a style that doesn't deviate from what at the moment is causing them to struggle. Yeah, there will be some concerning voices at the Valley, shall we say.
Yeah, down in 13th, but so tightly packed is the League One table. They're only 2 points off the playoff places. And now, you'd never know it from our weekly predictions, but Adrian Clark is a betting expert. Give me the over-under in that case then, Clarkey, on how many points Birmingham are going to win the league by, because they're already 5 clear with a game in hand on second place.
It's funny she should ask that, because I just looked at what they're on course for, and they're on course for 126 points. They're not going to get that. I think you set the line at around 98, something like that, because I think they've got a fantastic chance of going over 100. You can never guarantee it. You know, things can happen, but yeah, that they look the real deal, don't they? And I think they'll win the league. I don't think they'll come off top spot now. I don't expect them to anyone else to lead League One this season. It's as simple as that. They're doing pretty much everything right. The manager's having a blinder. Chris Davis is making good decisions in the transfer market, but good decisions in games as well. He's influencing them. Eyebrows have been raised about the use of Alfie May. At times he's wide, sometimes he's sub. Here he played in behind Jay Stansfield, and it was the right way to go for that game. And the two of them combined for the only goal of the game against Huddersfield. So, yeah, Alfie May will certainly want to start this one against Charlton. It is, of course, the Alfie May, Lee Bowyer, Gary Rowett derby, isn't it? Charlton against Birmingham. It is a big one for those boys. And I expect Birmingham to completely control this game. Charlton, you know, are going to have to absorb a lot of pressure. They're good at that, but... But yeah, I looked at the passes actually. Birmingham currently make 268 more successful passes per game than Charlton. So you know, that's a lot. That's an awful lot. You know, they're making over 600. Charlton are sort of 350 if they're lucky. So this is going to be a training ground exercise at times. The big news was the change of goalie. Bailey Peacock-Farrell was dropped for Ryan Allsop in the last game. So he's the man with the shirt at the moment. I've got to be honest with you. I think in a year's time, neither will be in goal for Birmingham. They will get more of a ball-playing goalkeeper in time. But it's Allsop's shirt at the moment.
I saw our friend and diehard blue nose Ian Danter at Stamford Bridge last week, and he was happier than a pig in muck with how it's going. In League Two, Walsall head to Chesterfield, smarting from getting their pants well and truly pulled down in front of their friends and family by Fleetwood in the week. At the same time, the Spireites were drawing at fellow newly promoted side Bromley. Let's start with Chesterfield, Sam. Only two league defeats, got that excellent win at Donny last week. We spoke about clubs maybe making the step from League Two to League One. Are you expecting a proper promotion push for the Spireites this term?
Yeah, I'd probably would have expected them to have slightly more points than where they are now. But I think they've had a particularly tough start. If you think the two defeats have come at Gillingham and Port Vale. So there's a bit of acclimatisation going on there. But they got good players. They would have been disappointed with the three home games where they've dropped points. Obviously, Swindon, Cheltenham and Salford, I think, are the three they would be expecting to be in teams of that ilk currently at home. So there'll be a frustration there. I think that probably games are going to be slightly different. I think only Notts County and MK are averaging more of the ball than Chesterfield. So they're very, very comfortable in possession. So that's going to present its own problems, I think, in League Two, in those home games with teams coming in and setting up to frustrate, knowingly that Chesterfield are a really good football inside. So it's something they're going to have to iron out, but I love the look of the front options. You've obviously got the experience of Madden and Grigg to kind of choose from. You've got the loney from Blackburn, Makande there as well. You've got Dobra, who young player coming through at Ipswich and really talented forward player, little diminutive chap with an eye for a goal. So they got really good options and they've got experience, you know, some guys that have been there and done it for Paul Cook previously at other clubs. So yeah, it's been I think a steady start and wouldn't rule out a tilt at the playoffs or even better, because they're a very nice, easy team to watch on the eye.
We called it earlier, didn't we, Clarky, with Walsall, that the most shocking result of the season. I think they're still in the automatic promotion places, but I guess the players will learn a lot about Matt Sadler in the next few days, won't they? Whether he's like, okay, that's done, write it off, or double sessions for the rest of the week. This cannot happen again.
Yeah, it's how you react to setbacks in sport in general, in any level of sport, but particularly professional sport. It's probably something that I struggle with, actually, like poor performances or poor results. I would let it get to me a little bit. Maybe it would knock my confidence more than it would some other people. But you can't let that happen. You've got to just back yourself and sort of park it and move on. And that's what Walsall have got to do here. Obviously, learn from their mistakes. But yeah,
So yes, that it'll be a test for Sadler's management, be a test for the players. I'm particularly thinking about the young defender, David Okagbo, who's really impressed me. Actually, I've seen him in the flesh. He looks good. He's only 20, part of their back three, good passer, good defender. But he had a bit of a mare against Fleetwood. How does a 20-year-old react to sort of a really poor performance going away to Chesterfield, which won't be easy with the forwards that they've got? So yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll learn a lot about Walsall and their promotion credentials, I think, from this. But yeah, they've got good players. You know, players in form. Connor Barrett, right wing back, has been brilliant so far this season. Taylor Allen, superb as part of the back three as well, as has Williams. He's got a long throw. They put loads of balls in the box, Walsall. They play the percentage game very smartly. And I would suggest that 6-2 Tonkin was a bit of an anomaly, but we'll find out more after Chesterfield.
Surely will. All right, we are nearly done for the day, but we're going to do our predictions before we leave you. Last week, Hull Cardiff finished 4-1. We all got the home win there. None of us got a perfect score, so that was a point apiece. Wigan Exeter, perfect score for S Parkin, who went for a 0-0 draw, and that's how it turned out. Clarkie, you got a point too. You said 1-1, nothing for me. I thought Exeter would go there and win, and none of us saw Chesterfield winning 3-0 at Doncaster. I had it as a draw, you two had it as a home win, okay. So no points there. But Sam, he's taking charge, isn't
he? Yeah, shall I give you a score update?
Yes, please.
So I'm keeping score here. Sam is now on 20. I'm in second on 10, and you're bringing up the rear on 9. But look, we're only what, eight weeks into the season. This is a long way to go. I've, you know, it's the old what's the thingy in the hair? I've got a mental blank there.
The thingy in the hair.
No, the hair. You know.
The hair and the tortoise.
Tortoise in the hair. That's it. Tortoise in the hair. I had a mind blank there. Yeah. Let's just don't give up, Matt. Don't give up, Matt.
There's different styles of play as well. Do I just consolidate, or do I start to showboat at this stage? I'm obviously thinking the latter, but it could be too early for that.
All right, well, let's see. Sam, Birmingham City Parking, you can kick us off. Derby versus your beloved Queen's Park Rangers. What's the score going to be?
Some prime reverse psychology is going to come in here. I will take the Derby win. And,
you told me on text the guys will go there and win.
And be very, very delighted when the opposite happens. I will go for I will go for a 2-1 home victory.
Clarking uproar because that's what he was predicting. I'll give you some time to think of another one and I'll put mine in, Clarkie. I actually think Derby might win this, but my conscience and my soul will not let me predict that. So I will go for a 1-1 draw. Adrian?
Yeah, I was going to go 2-1, but I'll go 2-0. 2-0 Derby.
Sad. Adrian, you can have first bite at our League One game, which is Burton against Bristol Rovers.
Yeah, both teams can create, can score. Not great at keeping clean sheets. Desmond, 2-2.
Nice, that's what I was thinking. Sam, what do you reckon?
Here comes the showboating. Yeah, Burton haven't won yet, have they? After my prediction that they were going to have a very good season, pre-season, which is looking ridiculous now. And I don't think we should get carried away by Bristol Rovers beating Charlton because they'd lost 4 on the spin. Therefore, Burton 1, Bristol Rovers 0.
Okay, all right. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw in that one.
Hang on, I said 2-2.
Oh, yeah. Can't have the same one, can we? All right. Let's... I'm going to spice it up a bit. I'm going to say a 3-2 Burton win. Okay. What about that? Fleetwood Bromley, I get to go first on this one. I think this is going to be 2-0 to Fleetwood. How about you, Adrian?
3-1 Fleetwood.
Okay, Sam?
More than happy to take the draw. 1-1.
He's getting so cocky, but I admire it.
I do too. It's quite amusing. We shall see how we get on with that next week. A reminder that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. You'll find a link for that offer code in the description of the show. You can follow us on X at EFL What There We Are, What The EFL on other social media platforms. Leave us a nice review if you could on Apple Podcasts and Spotify too. I mentioned X, formerly known as Twitter there. I do have a tweet of the week. for the chaps. This is we're ploughing a new furrow here. We've talked about this Walsall Fleetwood game a lot. I noticed that the Walsall account, poor old admin, who had had a difficult night, just put when the final goal went in 90-6 and spelled out six, not in capitals. Red circle emoji, black circle emoji, 2-6, two white circle emojis, hashtag Saddlers. It's an unenviable position to be in when you're in this kind of role, because it's usually quite a junior role. The reply is not particularly kind, although could have been better. Enjoyed Liam saying, "We're Fleetwood and we can score a lot of goals. Grow up, lads." Adrian, what did you make of it?
I feel for the admin full stop, really. It's such a high pressure position, and it's normally one of the lowest paid people at the club that gets charged with the task of doing the tweets. It's the young media person, isn't it, normally, that gets to do it. So yeah, I think sometimes you've just got to put as few words in there as possible when you're getting battered that much. And yeah, just three letters, S-I-X, six. Kind of does, ticks the box, doesn't it? Fine.
Briefly, Sam, as James Bay Bradley hit the nail on the head here. Penalty killed us. Too many underperformed. Ref was bleep. And I day have my lucky red Calvins on. We go again Saturday. Just what you were thinking, wasn't it?
Spot on. Yeah, I had my lucky pants when I was...
Did you? What were they?
Knocking them in. No, I just used to... I was so superstitious. I used to have like the same pants, the same vest, the same tuba grip.
Did you?
Sometimes didn't wash the tuba grip if I was flying that much.
The same tuba grip?
Yeah. Over my pads. Yeah. There you go.
Stunning. It's the kind of insight you get on this podcast.
And look, this is not the kind of insight people want, but back in the day, we didn't even wear our own pants. We shared pants. It was like you had a slip, didn't you, Sam? And then they called it a slip. It's just a basic pair of white pants. And they dish them out. I don't think that happens anymore. It's pretty mean, really.
During this free scoring period, I was taking my own just for some bizarre reason. That's how heavy I got into it. Yeah.
What a revolting note to end the show on. Don't let that put you off joining us next week, listener. We'll be back with more EFL goodness. Until then, have a good weekend. Bye for now.